Let me say that the series of sermons I've only captured a small portion of the traditions of Christmas. I will continue it on Christmas Eve also. Many of the Christian traditions and decorations we associate with Christmas have no relation to the meaning of the word itself, but are secular and even pagan in tradition and practice. There are some exceptions to this. The main one is the Nativity or creche scene. Although we are particularly aware of the Nativity display here at Epiphany with the Nativity Village, there'll be maybe some here who are not aware of the origins of this tradition, and some just may like a refresher. Therefore, I will include this important tradition within this series. The usage of these displays is rooted in Christian tradition, not pagan. Their origins began in the Dark Ages when people hand-carved nativity figures to be placed in their churches and homes. Now in 1223 A.D., St. Francis of Assisi expanded upon this practice, wanting to bring meaning to the message of Christmas and the incarnation. He began the practice of the living nativity display. According to one account, his first stable was built outside of his church. It was of life-size proportions, constructed by sculptors and carpenters of the day. Another account records that his first nativity utilized a cave on the hillside overlooking the town of Brescia, Italy. Regardless, his intent was to teach the concept of the incarnation, and perhaps focus the attention of the holiday away from pagan traditions, which the Christians were still celebrating, to the birth of Christ. St. Francis used the wax image of the Christ child, and real people for Joseph, Mary, and the shepherds, as well as live animals. He was very correct in that he did not include the wise men, for they came to the Christ child much later. He wanted the people to feel a part of the Christmas message, so he allowed both children and adults to intermingle with the live nativity figures. They became a part of it. During the whole event, they would sing hymns and celebrate. People from all over the region came to see and participate in this very unique experience. It was an instant success. And visitors became emotionally and physically involved and a vital part of that scene and that message. Our nativity village downstairs tries to recreate the fact of St. Francis' original event. And maybe you haven't noticed this, but if you notice, in that display downstairs, the townspeople are clothed more in the air of St. Francis than the time of Jesus. While the nativity figures are in line with Christ's time. You know, Christ came in the midst of life and comes to us in the midst of life throughout the ages, even to today. And that's what the Nativity Village portrays. Christ coming in the midst of life. The practice of living nativities and nativity plays become so popular that their usage spread throughout Europe during the Middle Ages. In Spain and Italy, France and Germany, they were enacted by children and professional actors, along with the singing of hymns by the average person. By the 1700s, miniature nativity figures in stables were made for display in homes. Eventually, the three wise men found their way into the pageants and home nativities. Now, one interesting side note is that the Moravians in and around Bethlehem, PA, or Pennsylvania, brought the homeland tradition of extensive nativity scenes into their homes. They were known as pulses. The nativity was the center of elaborate landscapes of mountains and farms and houses and bridges and roads, which represented their lives. Bringing St. Francis' nativity to a contemporary point. Now, German Baltimoreans picked up the tradition and added the usage of electric trains and the Christmas tree. Originally, they still included the nativity, but with the secularization of the holiday, nativities were excluded from what would be called Christmas gardens. Now, another tradition of Christmas may not sound as if it had its origin in Christianity. It is the candy cane. Although children were given candy during the celebration of Saturnalia, the candy cane did not come out of that tradition. The candy cane can be attributed to the children's choir director of the cathedral in Cologne, Germany. It was in and around the year of 1670 that the choir director had the task of trying to keep order among children in the children's choir during the extremely long Christmas Eve service. Now that is a challenge. First he tried punishing them. But that did not work. But only seemed to make it worse. He came up with the idea of a positive approach of trying to keep them occupied with something they liked. What better than candy? All children like candy. He went to the local confectioner and found what seemed just right. It was a hard white candy stick. Such hard candy takes time to consume. And that is just what he needed. But there was a problem. It's a big problem. priest did not think candy in the cathedral was proper. With this in mind, he went to the confectioner, asking him if the stick of candy could take the form of the shepherd's crook at one end. Well, the confectioner said, of course we can do that. So the candy would not only solve the problem of fidgety children, but also answer the priest's objections. It became a lesson for the children to understand the role that the shepherds played in the nativity. Well, the priest thought this was a great idea. This brilliant idea was a success, for it kept the children quiet throughout the Christmas Eve service. The idea took hold and spread. Within 100 years, white candy canes were being placed on Christmas trees throughout Germany. They would remain on the tree throughout the Christmas season until the tree was taken down at Epiphany. And then they were quickly consumed. Now later in England, the white candy cane was decorated with three thin red stripes representing the Trinity. And later on then, and I didn't add it to this one, but there would be a broad, bold red strip representing the redemptive power of the blood of Christ. Therefore, the candy cane became a Christian symbol of the shepherds at Christmas and the Trinity. The candy cane. Now, most of our traditions had their origins in Europe and even the ancient Middle East. But there is one tradition which is purely related to the New World, to the Americas. Its origins are with the Aztecs. The poinsettia. Its botanical name means the flower that withers, the mortal flower that perishes like all that is pure. Now, the Aztecs so admired the beauty of the towering 8-foot plant that they all but worshipped it. Their religious leaders used it, for it is thought to be, to have medicinal properties. And they also used it for its dyes. And it became sacred. So sacred that the common people were not allowed to even handle that plant. Symbolically, the red color of the leaves for them was a reminder of those who were sacrificed to their gods and a sign of their gods' approval. With the overthrow of the Aztecs by the Spanish, the poinsettia was forgotten. Later, a new legend was born and became a part of the celebration of Christmas in Mexico. The poinsettia became known as the Flor de Noche Buena, the flower of the Holy Night. since its leaves turned red during the Christmas season. Now there was a man by the name of Dr. Poinsett, an American ambassador to Mexico from 1825 to 1829, who was also an amateur horticulturist. Now he was so taken by the beauty of this plant that he immediately sent seeds to his friends in his hometown of South Carolina to work with. Now returning home, he himself propagated the seeds in his greenhouse, producing many plants each year. And each Christmas he would give these plants to local churches. The name Euphorbia poinsettia was given to the plant by a Philadelphia nurseryman, thus the name poinsettia. By the time of the Civil War, the plant had become a valued Christian tradition, a Christmas tradition, and was called the Christmas flower, or the Christmas poinsettia. Now, a seasonal tradition handed down from ancient time is that of singing of carols. Within the Christian tradition, the singing of hymns for Christmas had their beginning with the early Christians. Of course, additional hymns have been contributed throughout the centuries. Now, through the years, secular songs of the season were added to the classification of Christmas songs and carols. It is within these ever-growing lists of songs in which we can clearly discover the three major holidays we celebrate on the 25th of December. We don't celebrate one holiday. Think about this. First is the Christmas, which is celebrated through the singing of carols or hymns, which promote the story of the birth of Christ. These are the songs we sing in church on Christmas Eve and throughout the season of Christmas. They are very numerous and perhaps best recognized by Silent Night. And they are truly the Christmas songs, taking the word Christmas literally. They are the Christmas songs. They point to the Nativity. The second category of songs celebrates Santa Day, or Gift Day, or the secular commercial holiday. They are found in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and so on. The celebration centered around Santa. Finally, the songs which celebrate winter solstice, Frosty the Snowman, Winter Wonderland, Sleigh Ride. And if you really read the lyrics, that beloved Christmas song, White Christmas, is a celebration of winter and winter solstice, and not the birth of Christ. Even perhaps the most famous song, which is associated with Christmas, was not written for this holiday at all. Jingle Bells Jingle Bells was originally written for Thanksgiving, not Christmas. You know, although there are so many traditions associated with Christmas, we must take very careful aim at what we do celebrate and put in perspective what we celebrate. Three separate holidays. The same day. Now we are celebrating the last week in Advent. And in doing so, we look forward to Christmas. In this last week of preparation, let us clearly keep focused upon what we will be celebrating. This focus should lead us to keep in perspective what we are celebrating so that we do not become confused as to the good news of the angels with the secular and even pagan celebration which occur at the same time. It is the good news of God's love and nativity which we will be that enduring gift, not the temporary gift, but the enduring gift of Christmas. It is that gift which gives us the peace and the joy throughout every day of our lives. Not just one fleeting moment in the year. When 12 o'clock midnight strikes on the 25th, Christmas will not be over. It will not, because it will live within us 365 days of the year when we see the nativity in our lives. That's the Christmas that we celebrate. You know, so when we say Merry Christmas, we're saying this. But perhaps those people who are celebrating Santa Day or even Winter Solstice, they're probably very honest in saying Happy Holidays. Because they're not celebrating this. Why should they be merry about Christmas if they don't believe in that? No. Just think about that.